Yo, was being peace still exists in Great Britain. Police brutality exists in Great Britain. Slavery made the riches of Great Britain. The Queen wears stolen diamonds, Great Britain. A husband's a Freemason, Great Britain. They killed Lady Di, Great Britain. Do I have to go into why, Great Britain? Your politicians corrupt Great Britain.
In this election, there is a very, very clear choice.
Given that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party has cut back a seemingly insurmountable Conservative Party lead in Chairman May's snap general election, due to be held on June the 8th, 2017, on the back of a series of rousing speeches by the undeniably amiable leader and the launch of his manifesto for government, which promises to deliver a Britain for the many, not the few.
There are many children living in great poverty in Britain. Wrong, immoral, and unnecessary. How much longer will the waiting list be in our A&E departments and in our hospitals? How much more overcrowded will our primary school classes be after five more years of a Tory government? How many more people will be sleeping on the streets of our towns and cities because a government doesn't care and ignores them and their needs? How much more can people take of a government that is only interested in the wealthiest in our society and not caring for the majority and walking by on the other side while poverty increases, while the opportunities for young people are denied? Surely we can, as a society, do something different.
It is therefore essential that those who intend voting for his party know just how much of an effect their vote will have. For the purposes of clarification, it is necessary to compare established government policies to those contained in Corbyn's manifesto. After one has done so, it becomes clear that whichever politician resides at No. 10 Downing Street on June the 9th, the British people are having the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto imposed upon them by unaccountable Bolsheviks in expensive suits, whether the ostensible players know it or not. In the post-war years alone, the following Acts of Parliament were brought into being by a Labour government and are yet to be repealed by their political opposition.
And do you know what the turning point was? When we produced this. For the many, not the few.
The intended purpose of these statutes and countless others that have been given the full force of law by Parliament over the last 60 years is seldom spoken about, since common illumination on the subject would bring about the iconoclastic demise of the entirely imagined left-right political paradigm, both sides of which serve the same unaccountable power and keep the masses blaming each other for supporting one side and not the other.
Young people are our future. Young people give us everything. We must give them all the best chances we can. This government takes away the limited free school meals there are. We will provide a free school meal for every child in every primary school.
Will the adoption of the policies contained in the Labour Manifesto represent the completion of the laying of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto in the halls of Westminster? 1. Abolition of private property in land and application of all rents of land to public purpose. All land has been considered the property of the English monarch since the Norman invasion in 1066. Meaning that private beneficial ownership of land by an individual or business is impossible at law. Instead, those registered as legal owners at the land registry are tenants of the crown and can be violently evicted upon the order of Her Majesty's courts. According to data released by the Ministry of Justice, approximately 25,000 state-sponsored evictions took place after mortgage possession proceedings in 2009 alone, following the government's bailout and nationalisation of the insolvent banks responsible for selling virtually worthless mortgage-backed securities to unwitting investors, hungry to make a profit from people losing their homes to foreclosure. All rents of land are already subject to income or corporation tax, VAT, capital gains tax, council tax or business rates, as well as inflexible planning regulations for the purported benefit of the greater good, none of which will be abolished by a government led by either Corbyn or May. 2. a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Income tax was imposed upon the people to pay for the Napoleonic Wars, but every one of the multitude of taxes introduced since then will become much more heavy, progressive and graduated under a Corbyn government, which would attempt to pay for the rebuilding and expansion of the welfare state and a brand new education system by imposing massive tax hikes upon corporations, previously legal tax avoiders and the generally affluent, in what Corbyn describes as the means by which he will pay for a socialist Britain for the 21st century. When Prime Minister Harold Wilson attempted a similar Robin Hood-style policy in the 1970s, it eventually led to the winter of discontent and the rise of the diabolical Thatcherism, which brought about the subjection of the working classes to the diktats of the moneyed aristocracy and the rise of the disgraceful New Labour Party. When Hugo Chavez did the same in Venezuela, it led to the implosion of the entire country's infrastructure, albeit after his physical demise, from which the now broken nation may never recover. But a Corbyn government will succeed using methods that have always failed in the past, because he seems like a bloody good bloke, right? 3. Abolition of all rights of inheritance. Inheritance tax already exists at a general rate of 40% of estates below £325,000 in value, or £425,000 if the beneficiaries are children. But it will be increased significantly by Corbyn's government, which would also uphold the long-standing policy that dictates that all inherited estates are confiscated by the Crown if the trustee of that estate does not pay 40% of any value bequeathed above the statutory tax thresholds. This can only rightfully be considered an abolition of the right of an individual to determine the terms of the inheritance of their estate, whichever party takes office. 4. Confiscation of the property of all emigrants and rebels. All deserted property already escheats automatically to the Crown unless otherwise ordered by a court or rightfully claimed by another party. Whilst the last rebellion in Britain was in the 17th century and led to the Civil War, the confiscation of royalist property, the beheading of Charles I, and the creation of the privately controlled Bank of England, the owners of which have retained control of the government's purse strings ever since. 5. Centralisation of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. The Rothschild banking cartel has had a private monopoly over the creation and extension of credit to the government as well as the people, since Nathaniel Rothschild crashed the London stock market in the aftermath of the Battle of Waterloo, when his family effectively took control of world trade by acquiring the primary interests of the moneyed aristocracy of Europe for pennies on the pound. The head of the Rothschild family has been the primary advisor to the British government ever since. However, in the event a Corbyn government follows through on a stated intention to create a national investment bank, this might well be used to phase out the existing order of commercial banks, thereby creating an exclusive banking monopoly for the state, whether it is controlled by Rothschild or not. This would, of course, be eerily reminiscent of Lenin's pronouncement in 1917 that the Bolsheviks would nationalise banking in order to take control of capital and subjugate their political opponents to financial constraints. Whether the National Investment Bank is brought into being or not, the power to create credit is in the hands of the same unaccountable power that financed the rise of Lenin, Trotsky and Stalin, who presided over the slaughter of more than 61 million innocent people. But genocide couldn't happen in Britain, right? I mean, that hasn't happened here for almost 1,000 years, has it?
Every youngster should get a chance to get an apprenticeship, go to college or go to university. And so we will end student fees, restore student grants, and restore the EMA. These things are crucial for every youngster to get a chance, to get a chance in life. One of our proudest ever achievements was the foundation of the National Health Service, free at the point of use. We will fund it properly. We won't leave 1 million people waiting for social care. Now, people say to me, all this is a wish list. No, it's not. It's a programme, it's an agenda, and you know what? We are going to carry it out.
6. Centralisation of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. Corbyn's manifesto pledges to renationalise the national grid, the post office, the water utilities and the railways, whilst the road system, the NHS and the national parks are already publicly owned and heavily regulated. A British citizen cannot leave or enter Britain without a valid state-issued passport. Everybody is surveilled by CCTV everywhere they go, and all communications and internet activity are recorded by the service providers, who are legally obliged to provide that information upon the the request of a government agency, whether in the name of national security, public safety, or preventing an alleged crime. Corbyn has also implied in his Chatham House speech that a government led by him would seek to impose greater controls upon cyberspace, necessarily including electronic communications. What is more certain, however, is that a prospective Labour government has no intention of curtailing the intrusive powers of the total surveillance state that has been erected since 9/11. In all probability, it would extend those powers. The BBC remains what it has been since its creation, propaganda arm of the English establishment. This explains why successive governments are only ever criticised by BBC editors and journalists in the extremely rare event that they refuse to comply with the agenda of their Zionist controllers. Unless, of course, the state broadcaster is engaged in a game of double bluff, in which the favoured political candidate is unfairly criticised in order to rally public support for an apparently unlikely result, as per Brexit and Trump, which have since been revealed to be the desired result of the Zionist establishment. Only time will tell whether Corbyn's policies will be implemented by a Labour government, if selected. 7. Extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Whilst the state has not yet taken ownership of all the means of production, it has systematically sold off publicly owned utilities for profit, which Corbyn has stated he wants to break up. Many of the 1 million new houses he has also promised to build will inevitably be built on former wasteland, as per the seventh plank. Similar promises have been made by Chairman May, should she be selected on the 8th of June. Agricultural land, however, is already heavily regulated and subsidised in accordance with the European agricultural policy, which legally compels farmers to keep empty fields in return for subsidies so that EU member states are forced to depend upon foreign imports to sustain their own populations, whilst developing nations are forced to accept subsidised food imports from the EU, which is crippling the former's potential for development. 8. Equal obligation for all to work. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. In Britain, equal obligation of every able-bodied adult to sustain themselves with their own funds or by some form of employment is already enforced by the state, which resulted in thousands of people being forced to work when they were unfit to do so, leading to numerous fatalities. Whilst administrative armies of largely unaccountable bureaucrats seek to control every aspect of our lives, including agriculture, by ruthlessly enforcing every government diktat, regardless of who is in office, Corbyn's pledge that his government would end zero-hours contracts, tuition fees and raise the minimum wage to £10 per hour, whilst on the surface necessary and worthy social policies, neither Labour nor the Tories have any intention of removing the statutory obligation of every citizen to seek some form of employment unless they are able to sustain themselves with their own funds or physically incapable of working. 9. Combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries. Gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. Britain's agricultural industry provided food self-sufficiency at a rate of 95% in 1984, after which it was decimated by the European agricultural policy, which resulted in a drop to 60% self-sufficient for the food indigenous to these shores by 2014. In much the same way things transpired after Thatcherism decimated the manufacturing industries in the 1980s, along with the political power of the working classes, which made Britain dependent upon imports from other nations for many of its essential supplies. There is therefore currently no possibility of combining the agriculture and manufacturing industries. However, despite the fact that it is self-evident that the urban areas are still more densely populated, towns, cities and the countryside are already subject to exactly the same government legislation, levies and taxes, so the law does not distinguish them from each other in any significant way, and the ninth plank's terms have at least been partially satisfied. 10. Free education for all children in government schools. Abolition of children's factory labour in its present form. Combination of education with industrial production, etc., etc. Free state education already exists, but in addition to promising to create a national education service from the cradle to the grave, Corbyn has pledged to add VAT to private school fees, which will inevitably increase the number of pupils in state schools by making the cost of private education prohibitive for many thousands of parents and seriously jeopardising the future of hundreds of independent schools. Whilst factory labour by children has long since been abolished, and educational academies are regularly sponsored by various industries.
Let us resolve to do things differently. Invest in education. Invest in health. Invest in housing. Invest in jobs. Invest in a future for all of us.
There is therefore no escaping the inevitable conclusion that a vote for Corbyn's Labour Party is a vote for the completion of the laying of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto.
This election on this programme gives us all an opportunity to change the political direction of this country.
As if that is not enough to chill the bones of any unbiased observer, considering that the adoption of these tenets resulted in the deaths of more than 200 million people in the last century alone. The only other political package currently on offer to the British people is the warmongering corporatist version of essentially the same policies, the only tangible difference being that the communists will replace the corporatist neocon monopoly with a socialist state monopoly. But in each case, those who control the purse strings will retain power over the national government.
Our programme is real, serious and here. And we are real, serious and here. And you know what? We are going to change things.
Until the power to create credit is divested from the Rothschild banking cartel and central government is abolished and replaced with self-governed voluntary associations in every local borough, the British people will remain their slaves, as will the vast majority of the people on the face of the earth.
If I had an army, I would fight ya, fight ya. If I had the police, I'd arrest ya, arrest ya. If I had my own court, my own judge and jury, I'd sit back and let history tell the story.